Hello, my name is Fred. I actually met Paimon and his family. Can you hear me? Sorry. Yeah. Hello? Hello? Hello.
You hear me now?
Yeah. Hello.
Yeah, you can hear me now?
Oh, yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Oh, sure. Okay. All right.
It's a little broken.
Okay.
It's better.
Okay, good. All right. I heard you say your name is Fred, and how did you hear about Freedom Law School?
I actually met Paimon and his wonderful family at the Red Pill Expo in, I think, 2021 in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
Yeah.
And what is your question?
My question is, I'm actually filing for bankruptcy due to a bunch of credit card debt. And I was wondering, I haven't filed taxes since 2020. I know they asked for certain documentations referring to taxes. So is it even possible for me to file for bankruptcy if I haven't done taxes for 3 years?
Well, sure. I would think that if you have no evidence of income, that your bankruptcy case would be all the better, right?
Well, I did have W-2s from working like a per diem job, but I just, you know, after talking to Paimon, I was like, I don't feel like I need to sneeze.
Well, yeah, and it's not a matter of feeling like you don't. It's a matter of that you don't.
Correct.
You aren't a
correct.
Citizen or resident of the District of Columbia, and you're not an employee of the federal government or a contractor for the federal government, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So if the bankruptcy paperwork does say that you need to provide paperwork, you know, that you need to file, basically it'll say something like that you're going to file any taxes that are that you're supposed to, right, by law, that you're required to pay by law. You're doing that because there's no, the income taxes don't apply to you.
Okay.
What state do you live in?
California.
In California? Okay.
Yeah.
So it, you know, you have to look at your bankruptcy paperwork. And maybe we could look at it, you know, like if you, the paperwork that we can look over and to see what it says, I might be able to answer your question better.
Okay.
So you can always, anyone can always, and this is for anyone listening, you can always get on our website, which I'm showing on the screen. Well, it was on the screen. Marcus will be back up there soon. There we go. Well, that's our website up on the screen. And if you click on the Get Help, let's see here. Well, yeah, the best place to go is the Get Help page. A lot of your questions might be answered on the 7 steps to income tax freedom. If they're not answered there, they might be answered on our FAQ page, when they ask questions page,
okay,
or on our videos. You can get on our Odyssey channel and do a search just like you would be able to do on YouTube. And then we have a blog, so there's a lot of articles on there. you can call in. Sometimes we can answer basic questions over the phone, but in this case, a bankruptcy question, that's something that it would be best to have the paperwork for that.
Okay.
And we can answer it for free. You can send it up 10 pages. What you want to do is click here on the Freedom Hour page and down at the bottom. We don't say that anymore. We need to correct that. We used to say that you could send in up to 10 pages. I guess we don't do that anymore. But you can. You can send in up to 10 pages and get your question answered here on the Freedom Hour for free. Or the last thing on this Get Help page is you can order a one-hour private consultation. And you can either get that hour with one of the experienced activists like myself, Darlene, Eric, our accountant, can answer most questions, and Paymon could answer any questions that we can't during that hour. Or you can pay the higher amount, still a 50% discount because Paymon's hourly rate is $1,000, but that first hour you can get for half price. If you want to have the full hour with Paymon. So those are the different options. And so we could help you with that if we could see more paperwork.
Okay. The real big question I have about that is if I do consultation with y'all, can you also answer questions in conjunction with this bankruptcy as well as cryptocurrency assets that's involved?
The crypto assets are involved in the bankruptcy?
Yes.
Well, we should be able to advise you about that somehow.
Okay.
As far as the income tax aspects of it, yeah. But as far as I'm not sure what the bankruptcy part of it involves, how that ties into the cryptocurrency.
Well, I guess the long story short is I do have cryptocurrency assets, but I'm wondering if I can protect those from, you know, being garnished by the bankruptcy.
Oh, yeah, that's not something we would be able to advise you on. Yeah, because that's a part of the whole bankruptcy process.
Okay.
It's considered an asset, so it's considered your property if you own it. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you have to declare that kind of thing truthfully.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for your advice. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. You're so welcome. All right. Caller at area code 813, and then after that, area code 209. Caller on 13, what's your first name, and how did you hear about Freedom Law School?
My name is Rex. I found you on the internet, and I've called in once before, and payment was very helpful. I wanted to go on to the next step, but I'm confused about your plans and payment. I'm kind of looking for, I know once I stop paying taxes, IRS is going to start sending these threatening letters, and I'm just looking for, the templates to respond to. What kind of timeline do I have to respond?
Well, that's making an assumption that they're going to send you letters. They don't always send people letters, and even when they do, here, let's go to our website, to our blogs, blog articles. And let's look at, there's an article we have called The Progression of Letters the IRS Sends Out. Let's see here. Is it on that first page? And I just missed it. No. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I wonder what happened to the graphic. On this page. Anyway, the progression letters the IRS sends out, the list here of all a bunch of different letters. Sometimes they change the different numbers and so forth, but a lot of these letters, especially in the beginning, it's best not even to respond to. But if you are a Restore Freedom Plan member, then you send us the letter and we'll tell you whether to respond to it or not. And if there is a response necessary, we'll write that for you, email it to you, and have you sign it and send it to them. And very few of them need to be responded to, like this notice of deficiency is also called a 30-day letter. Let's see.
So I found this blog article. I guess I'm not clear on what these forms are. Are these forms example of what they would send to you, or these are the letters that you use to respond?
No, this is the progression of the letters that the IRS sends to you, or might send to you. Mm-hmm. And your chances of getting the next letter are less with each letter you get, because it's all computer generated stuff and they can only handle so much of workload. And so it's kind of a roulette game. You know?
Okay. So as far as I see a couple of them here are like, you know, it says contact us immediately. That's the title of what the IRS is saying in that letter, or you're saying contact payment immediately?
No, that's the title of the letter. These are the titles of the letters. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're worded like that to be real, you know, intimidating and make you think you better do something about it. But a lot of times it's just a fishing expedition for them.
Okay.
Or we often describe it as it's like they're a hunter going through the woods, walking down the trail, and actually you don't want to get out into the woods. You want to just stay on the trail. So you throw a stone into the woods and see if a rabbit jumps out. And if a rabbit jumps out, then you shoot it. So it's the same thing here, where they're just hoping that you'll respond. And then when you do respond, then they'll put a live agenda on it. Otherwise, it's just a computer.
Got it. Understood. So on an earlier call, Payman was speaking to somebody who called in who got a letter from the IRS, and there was only like 20 days to respond. If you don't respond, you owe the money. I mean, how would I know whether to respond or not to respond to an IRS letter?
Well, basically the rule of thumb is that if it's a certified letter, then you need to respond to it. But again, like I said, we've made it really easy. Let me go to our Restore Freedom Plan page. We've made it really easy for just about anybody that has any kind of risk involved in the IRS coming after them to join our Restore Freedom Plan. And under that plan, this this part called benefit here called custom responses to the IRS. If the responses are needed to any letter sent by the IRS, state revenue agencies, or third parties, such as employers or contractors, Freedom Law School will write a response for you. And also the unlimited consultation. So you just send in your any income tax related letters or documents or anything related to income tax you want to know about, you just send them to us and we'll advise you about them.
Got it. And to join, it's a percentage of your income.
It's basically a percentage of the taxes that you would have otherwise paid if you were under the impression that the tax applied to you.
Okay, got it.
I like to call it your fictitious tax burden. So instead of paying them what they want, you're paying us a much lesser, and letting them use your money against you and against the world, really.
Right.
You're giving a portion of that, a small portion of that, to us and keeping the rest for yourself. And then we're using it for the cause of freedom.
Okay, understood. So, thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah, you're so welcome. And I just emphasize to people that we're about to make this pricing calculator much more thorough to get the price down as low as possible for you, because a lot of people, especially in the beginning, have already unwittingly paid income taxes last year that they won't be getting back if they don't file, which we don't encourage people to file because it's more dangerous. That's our step two. It's more dangerous to file than to not file here on our seven-step plan.
Understood.
Yeah,
one thing I noticed, the links on that blog page for the progression of letters, it looks like those links are broken.
Oh, that very well could be, because these links were done a while back. And I'm not sure. Oh, okay, yeah, I gotcha. All right. We recently updated our website, so we'll go back in there and fix those broken links. Thanks for pointing that out.
Oh, no
problem.
Thanks. Have a great day.
Okay, you're welcome. Okay, caller at area code 209. What's your first name, and how did you hear about Freedom Law School?
My name is John. I'm from California. I stumbled on it, to be honest with you, in 2003. I missed doing my returns that year. I went through a divorce, change of career, went from a headhunter to being an executive recruiter to being a real estate. It got a little bit harder each year, but you are right. There is one thing that I will say to you that, and for the other listeners, you're right. I haven't really heard from them a whole lot. I've been self-employed, which makes it easier, obviously. But about a year and a half ago, this leads to my question. About a year and a half ago, I decided to join. I'm a real estate broker, so I can be independent. But I joined a company called Fathom Realty, which basically I get 100% of my commission. I just pay a transaction fee. But there were some benefits of being part of that. The benefit or not benefit was that, obviously, you know, they're reporting taxes or income. And my last two commissions got a 25% garnishment that the company held back, because normally I would get paid from the title company, and the title company would send the company the transaction fee. I've made a decision to go. I really would like to stay with Fathom, but I made a decision to go independent again. I've got one last transaction before I make that jump back into independent. And the and I think what led me to finding you was I started feeling like, you know, I need to get this thing. Either I was going to get an accountant to basically go through, figure out what I owe, see if I can negotiate with the Fed. And I know the state, California, is not one to negotiate much. So I at least put myself into a payment program. I never got to that point because I watched the video. And then I saw payment on Stu Peters. And I thought, okay, why would Stu put him on there? Because I had a lot of naysayers when I talked to a few people about what payment was doing. I had people right away say, oh, you don't want to do that, and you're just going to get yourself in more trouble. And I'm thinking, they don't know that I haven't paid taxes for 20 years because I don't go around advertising it, obviously, or bragging about it, looking for attention. And so now the question is, can I, if I really want to stay with that broker or keep my license there, is there something that I can do to basically tell the broker not to garnish my wages? Because I don't have any number. They're just estimating what they think I owe. But not, I mean, the IRS yeah. thing is estimating. So
IRS,
how do I deal with that?
Is it IRS or the state that is garnishing the wages?
The state doesn't really bug me. No, it's the IRS that garnished the wages.
Okay.
Or the commission.
Do you know the commissions? Okay. And do you know what tax years the garnishment is for?
I don't. And I haven't reached out to the IRS to find out either. Obviously. If I go ahead and let that commission, that 25% on this last transaction, go to the state or to the Fed, that's fine, and then I go back independent, then I just go back to what I was doing for the last 20 years. But the question is, I guess one of my questions is it possible to go to the Fed and then just and wipe that out? Because, I mean, they're just assuming how much I've earned either through the – because a lot of title companies don't always report. I don't always get a 1099 from the title company. So those transactions may not even gotten reported.
Here is that you got past the point of all these letters came to you, and they must have come to just some old address that you didn't get the letters or something.
Right.
That's why we tell people how important it is to make sure you're getting mail from the IRS.
Okay.
Sure that they have an address for you that you are frequently, at least once a week, collecting mail from, or a virtual mailbox where you'll get it sent to you every time you get a correspondence from them. But unfortunately, it sounds like the collection got to the stage where it's a levy against your accounts.
I don't have any levy against any accounts. They just sent a letter to the
contractor,
to the broker, right? To the contractor.
Right. You have a contract with the broker, and they found that out somehow.
Right.
So they probably ground the 1099 or whatever the broker sent them, and so they've contacted the broker and are getting they're levying the
correct
your commission.
Correct.
The first thing you have to do is find out why, how much it is, and what tax year it was for, and all those all that information
mm-hmm.
before we could tease out what could be done about it, if anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of paperwork we have to see, and it's that's why it's so important to have your address where you're getting that information, so at least you know.
Mm-hmm.
And can do something about it. You probably missed a couple of opportunities to challenge them on the amount of the tax. And so now you don't even know how much they think you owe.
So if I didn't, because I didn't challenge it, does that may mean that I'm SOL, or can I now go back and challenge it?
It just depends. There's things like, did they send it? What address did they send these letters to? And
never gotten a certified. By the way, I never got a certified one.
But you got other letters?
I have gotten, over the years, I've gotten one here or there, and I just kind of ignored it. But I've never gotten anything certified delivered to me.
And do you think that they had your do you think you had your address current with them?
They have to. I mean, like I said, I validate what you said, that they go after the people that have filed. I'm kind of the low guy on the totem pole because it's a lot easier to go after the people that has already filed versus the guy who hasn't. So I completely concur through my own experience what Payton has said. So now the question is, what do I need and how much do I pay you guys for the service, or at least to find out what I can do? Because at the end of the day, before I found you, I was thinking about dealing with the IRS and just getting, because I'm married to a Russian gal, the most wonderful woman I want, and the last thing I want to do is leave her a mess. And I'm thinking, I got to clean this. I got to figure out how do I clear out? We're married, but she's only worked a number of years, not a lot of years. And those particular years, I made her file singularly. So she is not embroiled in mine because she has filed. She wasn't making a ton of money to start with. And the money wasn't for us. I would just let her keep it so she could go back to Russia and visit her family, whatever she wanted to. But she did pay taxes. So she's good as far as the IRS is concerned.
What I'd say is that the best thing I would suggest for you are all the paperwork that you have and send it all in to us. And do the 1 hour consultation. Most people choose the $250 experienced activist consultation.
Sure.
As long as we have all your paperwork, then we can look over and advise you. And if we need to, we can ask Imam to get your questions answered.
Okay. All right, so basically what I need is compile this. Do I mail it to you first or go online and pay for the $250 and then mail it separately? I see you're putting it on the screen. So
you
fill this out and
you,
send us along with the paperwork?
Yeah, you can make copies of all your paperwork and send it with this form and the $250 cash. We have the instructions down here. Well, they're at the top, actually. Fill out this form and mail your cash by Priority Mail. Priority Mail Express is not necessary because it's faster, but it's more expensive. It's about $20 more, too.
Here's
our address, and then you call in with your track number, and we'll guarantee that that will get to us. You can also email a copy of the consultation report form and email your paperwork. And
okay, I can do that too.
Sooner that way. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because we know the package will get to us with the cash when you send
right,
it back
okay.
priority mail.
All right, I'll do that.
Okay.
Because at the end of the day, that's what I wanted to do is really either ante up, figure out what I got to do to ante up, trying to negotiate downwards a little bit on the federal side. And now here's another one last question that I'll let you go for somebody else. Once you figure out what this federal is, if, my thought was prior to thinking about Paymon was if, say, the federal cuts me down in half, is that what then the state uses to recalculate what they think I owe them?
Well, it doesn't necessarily happen automatically. The way it works is that when your broker or anyone else sends a 1099 or a W-2 form or any kind of, we often call them, because that's mm-hmm. what most of them are, then the IRS compiles that information and passes it on to the states.
Gotcha. Okay.
At least the states have an income tax. If they don't have an income tax like Texas, Florida, et cetera, then there's no reason for them to send it. But they send it to California, and California uses that information to do their own collection efforts, which they're a lot more onerous than the IRS.
Can I preemptively say I want to work out a payment arrangement, say $100 a month, just to throw a number, and that gets them off the trail for a little bit while we're working on this?
Well, that
so
depends
far,
on
I've
your
never
circumstances.
I've never had my checking account ever attached, so I don't.
Uh-huh.
But that that could happen at any time.
And like I said, the state of California, the FTB, Franchise Tax Board, they're much more aggressive about these
Correct.
Things.
All right. Well, I'll just get this thing started, and then we'll have a one-hour conversation. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right. We have a new caller at area code 201. Area code 201, tell me your first name and how you found out about Freedom School. Are you there? Area code 201.
I'm here.
Hi, what's the first name?
I appreciate your time.
My name is Christy Phillips.
How did you hear about Freedom School?
I found the show on Rumble. It was
okay.
Something just passed through one of my news feeds one day, and I happened to see it in Rumble.
Okay. And what is your question?
It's kind of a generic question. It's not tied to anything specific, but I'm curious to know what happens to people who want to do this and then down the road want to file for, say, like Social Security, Medicare for retirement purposes. Would they still be able to qualify? Is that something that changes because you're no longer filing taxes? How does that work?
The way that works is that it's based on whether you have, like Social Security is based on whether you have 40 quarters of payments to the into Social Security. And Medicare, I think, is the same way. So if you have 3 quarters showing on your record, then it really doesn't matter. And in a lot of cases, even if you didn't have that, there's lots of other reasons why they would give you the benefits. There's also the matter of the ethical aspect to all this, which is if you're not paying into the taxes, why should you want to expect to get a free handout. Basically, what's happening, a lot of people think that you've put into the system, there's some kind of a fund, and you've paid all the money, and now you want that money back. That's not the way it works. When you paid out that money over however many years, often a lot of people are paying year after year. And most people, it's not them that's paying it, it's their employer taking it out, forcibly taking it out of their paycheck and matching it with another 7.65% for a total of 15.3% of just about everybody's wages or salaries. And sending that directly to the federal, to the U.S. Treasury. And so all that money is going and to the U.S. government and getting spent every year. So that's spent. There's no fund that's getting saved up and invested or anything. So when you apply for Social Security and Medicare, money is being forcibly taken from the employees around America, and you're accepting that. So basically, you're using the government as your collection agency to collect money that isn't yours and using it. So personally, I would rather rely on by providence for my income when I if I get ever to the point, and I'm going to rely on my community and divine providence to support me. But
okay.
you can get Social Security and benefits if you so choose to.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to understand the process, because I have a few friends interested in doing this, but they weren't sure about if it would affect them, because they're both getting close to retirement age, and they didn't know if it would affect their benefit to qualify.
It might affect it just by a few dollars, but maybe not, because they've put in so much time. So it has to be 40 quarters, which is 10 years
It's paying in for 10 years? Mm-hmm. Is that what you're saying? You have to pay in to Social Security and Medicare for 10 years to qualify?
That's one of the main things they look at. But there's other things. There's Social Security disability. There's spouse benefits, survivor benefits, those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
So there's other reasons why you wouldn't have even had to work at all and still get Social Security benefits.
Got it. The other question I have is when I'm an accountant by trade, and when I was going through COVID and I realized there was federal unemployment being taken out, I was curious to how that even played in. And I noticed that on the website, Paymon talks about federal unemployment basically being a slush fund. Is that the case? Like there's no use for it? Is there any use for the federal unemployment fund whatsoever?
Well, I don't know where that unemployment goes. Most states, so there's both state and federal unemployment tax.
Right. And during COVID, everybody was collecting state.
Mm-hmm. And then there's also, state benefits. Yeah, the benefits are paid by states, right? What the federal government uses that money for, I have no idea.
Right, because employers
goes into the general fund.
Right, employers get are required to pay federal unemployment to the IRS. However, there's no way to access those funds.
Well, no, because the federal government is really just what they're claiming to do, at least, is to work with the states. It's kind of like a, I don't know, it seems like an incentive for the states to have an unemployment policy. It's normally a 6% unemployment tax, federal unemployment tax on the first $7,000 of every employee that the employer has to pay. Doesn't mm-hmm. come out of their paycheck. The employer pays that.
Right.
6% of the first $7,000. That's quite a bit of money. It's kind of like a hurdle that they have to jump over for every, you know, to get every employee. That money, that 6% gets reduced if, according to the state's unemployment tax. So usually it ends up being the only 0.6% instead of 6%. So one tenth of the amount. I think that money just goes to regulate the state unemployment insurance programs and stuff at the federal level.
Mm-hmm.
There's no benefits. There's no federal unemployment benefits that I know about.
So they basically, the feds would support the states if the states were in a deficit. That's basically what it, that would, is that what would happen?
I don't know. I haven't really looked into that. All I know is what we've investigated and researched that show on our petitions to Congress. And so I'll take you there and show you under the employment taxes petition, the second one. Here it is here. And this includes the tax law about the federal unemployment taxes. And so I'll take you to that. It's in Chapter 23, Unemployment Taxes, Section 3306. It's worded a lot the same way, but a little bit differently than the Social Security and Medicare taxes. It's all mm-hmm. about the term United States here. And then we show how, and for purposes of the unemployment tax, Chapter 53, definition of the term United States, right here, only includes the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, so mm-hmm. D.C., to federal island, U.S. island territories.
Right.
So that's all. That's the only employers that are supposed to be into that unemployment tax. And even then, they have lots of different exceptions. They always have exceptions, and sometimes exceptions to exceptions. It's the Internal Revenue Code is just so convoluted. It works out to be pretty simple for most of us, because we're not in in D.C. or the Virgin Islands or Puerto Rico.
Now, one of the things I was researching some of this a few weeks ago, and I saw where the original law had included Alaska and Hawaii in it. Is there a place, and that was registered on the Library of Congress tax law. I was trying to find a more recent version. Do you know where I can find a more recent version of that law that excludes Hawaii and Alaska?
Well, I think you might be referring to the individual income tax laws And that's in our first petition letter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's related to the overall definition of the term United States for income tax purposes. And see here, after that, that definition is United States. Further down in the letter. But anyway, mm-hmm. definition is 7701. Here we go.
And Congress, and the yeah. Library of Congress has the most recent version of this, right? I could find it. I was having a problem trying to find the amended version to excluding the two states. So I was trying to find the newest version that excluded. So, you know, I was just, you know, doing my due diligence, so to speak, and I wanted to just see it.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing you find at the Library of Congress, the official documents that you want to look at there are the Supreme Court decisions before 1991.
Uh-huh.
Then the Supreme Court decisions to get the ones after 1991. Go directly to the Supreme Court website. But the place to go for the laws like Internal Revenue Code Section 7701. Trying to show it here on the screen. Okay. Yeah, there we go.
Mm-hmm.
One says, like, for example, the term state shall be construed to include the District of Columbia, and that's all it includes. It's just that one federal state. Doesn't include the 50 states. And so then in the term United States definition only includes the states, which would be only the District of Columbia and the District of Columbia. So this mm-hmm. goes back to plural versus singular question. This goes back to what you were saying, that Alaska and Hawaii used to be included in this definition of the term state. And that was before they became states of the Union. They were still federal states or federal territories defined
right.
as a state for income tax purposes. We talk about that in, let me go back here to, Step one, if you go to our short video, 100 Years of Income Tax Deception, this one and the long one here, this goes into good detail about the Alaska and Hawaii definition and when that was in 1959. And 1960, those it's when they became states. Those laws, those definitions, the Hawaii and Alaska were taken out of that definition of the term state. So you could go to learn about that.
Mm-hmm.
Did I answer your questions?
Yes, that's it. Thank you so much.
Okay. You're so welcome. We have another caller at area code 720. Please say your first name only. You can help it. And how you found out about Freedom Law School, and then your question.
Hi, my name is Dylan, and I found out about glad to be on the show. I found out about Freedom Law School from David Rodriguez, as he was the leader of the Santa Cruz Voluntarist.
Uh-huh, yeah. David. Yeah. Great. How can I help you?
Yeah, I've recently started an LLC in the state of Wyoming, but I'm a Colorado state resident. Now, I was wanting to register my car under the LLC, but I don't know how that would work. Would I do that in the state of Wyoming or Colorado?
Well, so the LLC, does the LLC own the car or do you own the car?
Well, I own the car, but I was considering making it a business asset.
Okay. Well, and it really doesn't matter that much in that case either, or I should say, you can, even though it's a Wyoming LLC, doesn't mean that the LLC can't have an address in some other state. And it doesn't even need to be in Colorado or Wyoming. But Wyoming doesn't have income taxes, so could be there as well. It's right next door to Colorado. So, you know, you might consider getting an address for LLC in Wyoming. And
right, he, I believe, has an address in Cheyenne, if I'm not mistaken.
Is that the is that an address where you as manager of the LLC can get mail, or is that the registered agent's address?
That's the registered agent's address. I just have him forward everything anytime he gets mail on my behalf.
Oh, okay. So that's a registered agent that is willing to do mail forwarding.
Correct.
Okay. Well, there you go. If you can, you could possibly get did you say car registration or driver's license?
Car registration.
Registration. Yeah. Sounds like you probably get your car registered in Wyoming, possibly in that address. You just have to find out the state requirements for addresses as to where you can have your car registered. It just depends
on
the state laws.
Okay. Would it be possible to register the car in the state of Colorado under the LLC?
Sure. There's no reason why you can't do business in Colorado. You know, why the LLC can't do business in Colorado.
Right.
You just
heard.
Have to always keep in mind is that you are not the LLC and the LLC is not you. So it's two separate things. It's limited liability company, and the limited liability means that it's compartmentalized, so it limits your personal liability as the owner of the LLC. As long as you don't entangle your personal affairs with the business affairs.
Okay.
The personal finances with the LLC finances.
Right. I think the only thing that's the same between my personal finances and the business finances would be the banking institution that I use. Other than that, the finances are separate. I have separate checking accounts, separate credit cards.
You have the same bank. You have a personal account and the LLC has a business account at the same bank?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And is that bank in Colorado or Wyoming or both?
Both. It's nationwide. Probably worldwide.
Nationwide bank. Uh-huh. Okay. Eventually that could become a problem somewhere down the road. Not likely to, but it's possible. It's a good practice at some point to have the business account in a different bank than your personal account.
Okay, that makes sense.
Just no, it's nothing to be afraid of, just a cautionary measure.
Okay. My registered agent told me that for me to do business in Colorado, I'd have to file paperwork with my LLC in the state of Colorado. Is that true?
Well, it may or may not be. It depends on what type of business it is and is related to that.
Well, it's a location-independent coaching business.
Okay. Well, yeah. That's.
But it seems like state and federal governments don't seem to comprehend the concept of a location-independent business.
Right. Well, that's why, you know, best to have your some address for the LLC that's in a income tax free state.
Right. That's why I opened it up in Wyoming. It was by Paymon's recommendation.
Mm-hmm. Great. Very well.
So if I were to go to the DMV in Colorado, and I wanted to put my car in the name of my business, then
you just
how
have
would
to
I
research
out
that.
Paperwork?
Yeah, you just have to go to the call them or go to the website and look that up. That's
which website?
Not really the Wyoming DMV or whatever they call it in the state, the vehicles or whatever it's called. It's not particularly an income tax question. They would tell you what you need to provide in order to get your car registered there.
Okay, so they would tell me all the steps that I need to take.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Should be on their website. Mm-hmm.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you.
Okay, you're so welcome. Okay, I think that's it for callers for the evening. Thank you for listening to the Freedom Hour, and tune in again next week. And we'll talk to you later.
Well.